It's 1986, and a young Russian woman, Galina Kogan, has just arrived in her new home. She chose Australia on a whim after literally bumping into an Australian on a street in Leningrad in the foggy days after the death of her beloved mother. Galina's new home is shocking for its space and abundance, but also for the strange quirks of these Australians who eat bland food, suspect intellectuals, and smugly believe that they live in the greatest country in the world. This is the setup for Invented Lives, the new novel by the Australian writer Andrea Goldsmith. Andrea, welcome.
Hello, Claire.
Look, before we get into the story, perhaps you can explain for me the significance of the title of your book, Invented Lives.
Yes, it's the notion that we all invent ourselves. We're different with our family, we're different with our work colleagues, and no more is that the case than these days in the digital world. So it's quite interesting to have a look at self-presentation and self-construction back in the 80s, and odd how high a beam it shines to where we are now.
And one of those characters we get to know is Galina, this young Russian woman. Can I ask, Andrea, what made you want to write about Soviet Russia in the 1980s?
Well, this book started in 2013, and I was thinking about exile. It was a time when we were the start of the imprisonment of desperate people seeking help on our shores, being confined at Manus and Nauru. And it just occurred to me that it just seemed so obvious that no one would willingly choose exile, that exile is the option when choices run out. It just seems so obvious. At the same time that I was thinking about this, as a lot of Australians were, and where our compassion had actually gone, I was reading about Putin. And you can't understand Putin without going back to the Soviet years. So there I am thinking about exile and all of these people who were seeking our help, and we were demonising them, and I'm reading about Soviet Russia. And it reminded me of what we did in the 1980s under the leadership of Bob Hawke. We welcomed many Soviet Jews who came here as emigres, but in a sense it was a type of exile because they were forbidden ever to return to the Soviet Union. And we welcomed them and they became part of Australian life.
And Galina is one of those Soviet Jews. How were they treated in 1980s Russia?
Anti-Semitism is deeply entrenched in Soviet Russia, and actually before that. Yes, Galina had a job. She's in her mid-20s. She had a job as a children's book illustrator, and her mother was a translator. But there were restrictions on promotion. There were restrictions on movement. There were restrictions on what schools and universities you could go to. There were restrictions on life as a Jew.
And interestingly, I think also the discrimination is almost internalised as well for Galina. How does she think about herself and her religion?
I think that's a really interesting question because, of course, religion was outlawed in the Soviet Union, whether you're Jewish or Orthodox or whatever. So Galina has absolutely no idea what it is to be Jewish, except that was her ethnicity, her official ethnicity in the Soviet Union, and it meant that she was very much a second-class citizen. But when she gets to Australia, and when she first arrives, she boards with a Jewish family, and they're actually an observant Jewish family. They are so, their Jewishness is so foreign to her. So she feels foreign as a Soviet citizen, and after all, even though she's left the Soviet Union, it's the Soviet Union that has actually formed her. So, for example, the freedom and the trust and all of the sorts of things that characterise Australian life are very, very foreign to her, and it's something that she needs to learn. And I suppose this is where, as you say, she arrived in Australia really on a whim, and she actually meets up with that young Australian that she literally banged into in Leningrad, Andrew Morrow, and it's through him that she does come to embrace Australian life through Andrew and his family.
And I want to come to the Morrow family in a moment, but I just want to stick with this feeling of being an immigrant for a moment, because these passages in the book were so strong for me, Andrea. Just the loneliness she feels because she's no longer, you know, she's no longer a Russian, but she's not an Australian. You write, she felt adrift in some never-never land, caught between the familiar yet no longer possible and the new and far from secure. Yeah. I mean, how hard would it have been for people like this, you know, to come and try to find some sort of sense of identity in a new life?
I think appallingly difficult, and even more so for someone like Galina, who is by herself. And at another time she says that Australians all relate to her as a Russian, as a foreigner, and it just simply does not gel to how she sees herself. And the other thing, I mean, this is a book about identity, and certainly not just Galina's, because the Morrow family also have issues of identity. But there's one time when she's driving with Andrew, and Andrew points out his school and he points out where he used to live, and he takes her to one of his favourite places. And all of these things are markers, signposts of identity and of a past, and she can't do any of that. And anyway, she's terribly ambivalent towards the Soviet past that she's had anyway. So it's extremely, extremely difficult for her. And she is certainly someone who needs to invent a new self if she's going to get along in Australia.
And as you said, she does that partly by her friendship with this man, Andrew, the same man she ran into on the street back in Leningrad. You could say that Andrew's in his own type of exile, not literally, but perhaps emotionally. What's going on with him?
He is. He is a profoundly shy man. And so, in a sense, he's in exile from the social community that we all take for granted. And this was quite deliberate to me, because when I was thinking in the early days of this book, why is it that we Australians can't understand the extraordinary difficulty of exile and be compassionate towards those who are suffering it. And it occurred to me that for many of us, the experience of exile, not moving country, but being on the outside, feeling great barriers to what we want to be or who we actually are, it's a common experience. So Andrew, yes, he is profoundly shy and is in exile from the community of men and women. And I've made him a mosaicist, and that's the reason why he was in Leningrad. He was studying with the master mosaicists here, and it's a solitary profession at which he excels. So that's Andrew. But his parents also, they experience a certain sort of exile too.
Absolutely. So this is Leonard and Sylvie, his mum and dad. Sylvie, she's this bright, intelligent woman. But it's so unfair, Andrea, because she's really a victim of her era. I just feel like Sylvie was born in the wrong year.
She was. She's actually much the same age as my mother would be. She was born in the 1930s. And if she was very, very bright, she came top of her high school, and if she had been a boy, her parents would have somehow found the money to send her to university. But as a girl, and particularly a pretty girl, it was going to be a waste of money. So there was absolutely no question of her going on to study, and she did what girls did in those days. She got married at the age of 19. And it's a good marriage to Leonard, and it's a loving marriage, and it's a comfortable marriage. They're middle class, but she feels the confines of this marriage, and she knows she shouldn't complain because she's got everything and she does good works and she makes the best orange cakes and she's perfect in every way, except she's stifled. And what she does to extend the confines of her life is she has a collection of letters, handwritten letters, written by strangers, usually long dead strangers, and through them she imagines other lives and therefore expands her own. So in a way, she's living in exile from her own potential, but she's worked out ways of managing it.
We should mention she also goes and nicks letters from abandoned houses and stuff. She's a funny character.
She does. She's got a hidden life that actually Galena certainly finds out about, but the other people that are close to her don't.
You mentioned she's a similar vintage to your mother. Mm. Were you thinking of your own family and your own history when you were writing this?
Look, I'm a fiction writer and you know, I like making people up and I like making their situations up. But the fact is that I was very, very aware from a fairly early age that my mother, who was one of four in her family, was very, very bright, who finished school in 1945. She matriculated in 1945 and she was engaged a year later. Whilst she used her mind in many, many ways, university was something that she could have done back then. But when Whitlam actually opened it up to free education, she certainly didn't have the confidence to do it then. So, yes, there was a shadow of her as I was thinking about Sylvie, but Sylvie is, in every other respect, she's made up, and certainly her collection of letters was totally made up.
Yeah. I'm not saying your mum was a letter thief, don't worry. Mm. The final character in the foursome there is Leonard, Sylvie's husband. He's a frustrated poet. He has a secret. I'm not sure how much we can talk about that today, though. Andrea, what can we say about him?
We can't say very, very much at all, because that would be letting things out and that wouldn't be fair. But yes, he was a sensitive man who wanted to be a poet, and he's turned out to be a businessman, a successful businessman, but it's not what he had in mind. And he is a man that has always straddled two worlds. He's led parallel lives, and he continues to do so. And they are, certain of his lives are deeply, deeply hidden. But during the course of this novel, due to circumstances really beyond his control, he becomes very, very much exposed, and it certainly puts a strain on the marriage of 30 years. It's been a long and good marriage.
Andrea Goldsmith, one of the things I loved about this book was reading about the city of Melbourne through a newcomer's eyes. You know, Andrew takes Galena on a trip to the Victoria markets, all these places we see the scenery, we see the beaches. I wonder what it was like for you thinking about your city through a stranger's eyes and how wonderful that must have been.
I just loved it. I mean, this is one of the joys of being a novelist, that you create characters who are absolutely not you. And in writing the novel, you need to see the world, whether it is the world of an exile or the world of Melbourne, through stranger eyes. And I had an absolute ball. It's a bit like, you know, when you go travelling and you come back and your eyes are clearer and you see your familiar city for the first time almost, or certainly in a new way. So it was for me in portraying Melbourne through the eyes of Galena. I saw things not just in a new way, but everything was enhanced. The smell of jasmine, for example, at a particular time of year, and yes, the Victoria Market, which I do visit quite often, but many, many other places. And it was just wonderful. It's one of the joys of the job, I have to say.
Well, I'm glad you had such a good time. I loved reading this. Andrea Goldsmith, it's been great to meet you today.
Thanks, Claire. It's been great to be here.
Andrea Goldsmith's new novel is Invented Lives, and it's published by Scribe.